When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So I went into his door, like knocked on, and he just like, it's almost like Lord Sugar in The Apprentice, just got to it straight, so just pulled the trigger, said, we're not going to renew your contract, son. We feel as though you lack a yard of pace to become a first team player here. So it's like frozen your body. I didn't know what to do, what to say. I didn't know how to react. You talk about tough blows in your life. Yeah, that was hard, because usually the hardest blows you don't see coming sometimes. I've had a decent season. I've done all right. Certainly not let myself down, and that was it.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Manchester Is Red podcast. I'm Tara Marshall hosting today, and I'm joined by a special guest, Dr. Alan Tong, former Manchester United youth team and went on to play for Exeter in the Football League, now a lecturer at UCFB and a doctor, as we said at the start. Yeah. Welcome, Alan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Tyrone. Thanks for inviting me in.
Not a problem at all. You're in for, you've written a new book. People might be able to see it on the video, From Red to Red, Alan Tong, the story of Fergie's first fledgling. I mean, first of all, tell us a little bit about why you wrote the book and why you wanted to write the book.
Yeah, just an ambition really of mine. I was lucky enough to be in the Man United Ex-Players Association and was having a chat with somebody a year or two ago, just as you do over dinner, and telling the man a little bit about my background and where I'd come from and what I'd done. And he just looked me in the eye and said, you should write a book about this. And I thought, oh, well, you know, maybe, you know, if there's enough material, if there's enough content in there. So I contacted a lad called Michael Garvey, who'd wrote John O'Kane's book, and just said to Mike, like, well, you've done that one. Do you think there's enough here to, you know, to put something together? And he said, yeah, well, let's have a chat about it. And from that, it was kind of like I say, realising ambition and just set about thinking about the journey that I'd had from starting off in football and then ending up with a PhD. You know, thought it might be something a little bit different in relation to football stories.
Mm. Yeah, it shows how many good stories there are in the game, really. It's not just the autobiographies of players who've played 600, 700, 800 games for United or City or whoever. There's good stories everywhere, and this is a prime example of it, really, isn't there, everything you've been through?
Absolutely, and, you know, in my PhD, I sort of wrote, like, one of my studies was on alternative voices, and you're right, Tyrone, I think it's not all about, you know, the top lads and the winning all the Premier Leagues and the FA Cups. There's lots more players in there as well. And I think one thing that we forget as well is everybody seems to just think Premier League is everything. You know, there's a lot more football underneath the Premier League. There's a lot more going on there in the Championship, League One, League Two. You know, the professional teams now in the non-leagues, and, you know, there's a lot more footballs than just Premier League level.
Yeah, definitely. And how did you find the experience of going back through those memories and writing the book?
Yeah, interesting. You know, luckily I've been, you know, blessed with a reasonable memory, and, you know, and sort of some of the recollections are still quite vivid, really, in some of the experiences that I had, especially around joining Man United and training at the Cliff, and, you know, very fortunate to be around, you know, some really good players for a small period. And then I've been trying to cut my teeth in at a completely different club, going down to Exeter City, a completely different culture. And, you know, just coming out of that young, you know, had a really bad injury quite young. And, you know, that sort of prompted me to go on another pathway and in another direction. And so, yeah, like lots of people, Tyrone, in life, lots of twists and turns on my journey so far, yeah.
And the subtitle, Fergie's First Fledgling, I'm sure that'll be attracting a bit of interest now. I mean, tell us that story.
Sure, yeah. So, you know, going back to sort of November 1986, that seems a long time ago now. You know, obviously Sir Alex arrived. I think I was just I was training at the time on a Monday night and a Thursday night in the School of Excellence. And what had happened was, you know, back then football was a little bit more less carefree, if that makes sense. I could play for lots of teams. I represented my school. I was playing in Man United's B teams, like the first sort of step on the ladder. I was representing my county, and I was also playing in like a Sunday League grassroots team as well. So like Monday night I beat United, Tuesday night school team training, Wednesday night grassroots training, Thursday night back at United, Friday night off, and then most weekends, Saturday morning, Sunday morning, playing games. So yeah, it was a bit mad back then. So what it was, I was training Monday, Thursday nights anyway. I played in a Greater Manchester County side game against Cheshire on Macclesfield Towns Ground, the Moss Rose Ground. And the lad who was the youth development officer at the time, a fella called Joe Brown, I think old Burnley player, managed Burnley for a spell, came to my mum and dad and said, like, we'd like to invite Alan down over the Christmas period for an extended trial. So it was a bit strange, Aaron, because I went down on trial on the 28th of December, stayed over the New Year, like New Year's Eve in the halls of residence back then. And I think they took us to a game on New Year's Day, and then on the 2nd of January, kind of like, you know, the end of the trial, and they let us know decisions on that. So it was one of them weeks where everything went really well. I had a really good few practice matches. I had lots of the staff watching, and at the end of the trial, like they said, like, they'd like to offer me, you know, something, schoolboy forms and apprenticeship. So I went to see Sir Alex Ferguson, and he sort of like had my mum and dad in and just said that this is the start of a long journey and start of a tough journey. You know, nothing's guaranteed in football, as I went on to learn. But I was the kind of the first youth player that was signed up by Sir Alex when, you know, we joined United 86. I think I officially got registered in January 87.
So the answer to the quiz question is yourself, not Viv Anderson.
Well, I always look at this acquisition, or you playing myself, first acquisition. You know, Sir Alex will always say, you know, Viv Anderson's the first fee signing that he paid for. But I think Viv arrived a bit later in 1987. So in relation for the first non-fee signing, or the first acquisition, you know, I was kind of like, sort of like in there.
Yeah, you write the book about your, you know, your memories of watching United as a kid, and it's clear that you were a United fan and from a family of pretty big United fans, certainly your dad.
Yeah, my dad used to, you know, my dad used to watch Man United back in the 50s and 60s. You know, he was there for Bestie's debut. He watched a few of the, you know, the Busby Babes in action, and, you know, just a love of United, as it is, Tyrone, with most families. You know, usually it's passed through the generations. And I think when I played kind of as a young lad in the garden, we always used to recreate cup finals and imagery around that. And, you know, I was lucky enough to, my dad built me a net, and, you know, like your early sort of memories of football was fantastic in relation to that. And yeah, just used to take us to, you know, you watching youth team games, and I remember going down to Old Trafford and different grounds around the northwest, watching the youth team, actually, like Mark Hughes, Norman Whiteside, Clayton Blackmore. And, you know, it was back in the days, Tyrone, as we know, like the training ground was a little bit more receptive to fans going in. So, you know, on occasion, you could go and watch the first team train, which was amazing. And as you say, coming through that sort of era, 80s, United were more of a cup side, really, and were chasing down the league title, weren't we, for many years. But, you know, 83, you know, the semi-finals at neutral venues, you know, just really quality. I think the 80s and 90s was a real quality time for football, and, you know, following that through 85, beating Everton, like Norman scoring the winner, and then, you know, going on Lee Martin getting sort of first trophy for Sir Alex. And then just on that kind of transitional point, so I unfortunately moved on in 1991 just as it was starting to get exciting. And I kid you not, somebody at an ex-players dinner said to me, like, I wish your mum and dad had waited a couple of years, you would have been in that class of 92.
A bit too early, didn't you?
100%. So I blame my mum and dad for that. So yeah, I was kind of coming in that block behind, and you know, that class of 92 arrived on the horizon then.
Yeah, I mean, we know now what Sir Alex did for the youth system at United, how he transformed it, how so many young lads came through. I think you were 14 when you signed.
That's right, yes.
I mean, how did you find the experience there? Because it's clear in your book, it's not, I mean, it's a very different environment then as it was now, isn't it?
It was. I mean, like a lot of, you know, businesses, organisations back then, you know, you talk about the military and things like that, a lot more, I'd say probably shop floor culture, a lot more banter. But I think you have to be careful sometimes, banter and bullying are kind of like on a very close, you know, very different to the modern day Tyrone in relation to, like, we had jobs to do, which, you know, which is probably builds your character, keeps you grounded, but used to, yeah, sweep dressing rooms, clean toilets, clean showers. Used to take us to Old Trafford on like a Monday after the game had been on Saturday, sweeping all the stands and the stretty end and stuff like that, and used to end up with like loads of chewing gum all over your trainers and yeah, all the sort of empty pie foils and things like that. And so, and I think like back then it was kind of, I know things work in circles sometimes, but it was the day of the YTS, like the sort of used to get £28.50 a week, so it wasn't a glamorous existence by any way, shape or means, but well, I think a good existence. And but I think some of the stuff, some of the rituals, initiations were a little bit near the knuckle. And, you know, I think Ollie Kay talked about it in his book Forever Young about, you know, an old colleague of mine, A.D. Doherty, and, you know, some of it bordered on not very nice stuff to go through, to be fair. But you know, that's just the way it was back then. And, you know, certainly something that I feel wasn't right.
Yeah. I mean, Eric Harrison is a name synonymous with youth development at United. It's, you know, it's clear from reading the book that it could be a difficult relationship at times, that the way he did things then worked for a lot of players, I guess, but it was kind of, it only had one way of working, maybe.
Yeah, well, just old school, really, like an old school approach. And, you know, Eric was a tough coach. If he said something, you just did it quickly. There was no negotiations or anything like that. And, you know, but I think sometimes all these experiences, they pay off later on for you when you're kind of like, you know, it does build a bit of character. But, you know, I always think try to get this, like, you know, with my PhD, looking at some of the philosophical stuff like Aristotle, it's finding the golden mean, the right balance. You know, I understand, you know, building character, but, you know, not really humiliating people. And, you know, again, it's just borders on the bullying side, and you know that was unfortunate for a year or two. That sort of those experiences were there.
Yeah, I mean, the chapter is called, I think, the best of times, the worst of times. Is that kind of how it felt? That it was at 14, it's probably a dream to go into that club, and there's times where it got pretty difficult for you.
Yeah, I think again, looking at that, I mean, the title there was like linked to sort of a book that I read in English literature at school, because I had sort of a reasonable academic journey, like in my GCSE. I'm not saying like I was, you know, I wasn't a star or anything like that. I wasn't getting like 100% on maths, or, but I was okay. I could, you know, I'd enjoyed English and writing and storytelling and things like that. And I think the best of times, worst of times, I think when you pull that kit on and, you know, the badge and the training gear and going over to train on the AstroTurf at the Cliff, unbelievable. But like, I think in all honesty, like when I went into sort of United full time, it was like a bit different to what I thought it would be like. And but like anything else, you know, you go through it, you learn, you try and develop, you try and do your best. And, you know, that was kind of how it was back then.
Yeah. I mean, was it difficult to fit in there? You clearly had to be kind of a very outgoing, confident character maybe to fit in. Was it difficult to fit in? Did you feel after you kind of had to adopt a cloak, almost try and be a different person?
I think so. I think like anything else, Sarah, in life, there's like different personalities in workforce, isn't there? You'll always get your loud ones, your quiet ones, your sensitive ones. And I think that was kind of, you know, my personality was a little bit more reserved. But, you know, I like to think I could sort of handle myself when needed, you know. I think there's nothing wrong with that. But I just didn't like the humiliation stuff of it. And, you know, you're supposed to be in an environment of excellence, and, you know, you go back and sort of look at some of the great players who played at United, and then, you know, I just think the experience, and this is not just myself as well, this is like other apprentices of the year, and it's not just Man United as well. Yeah. I think broadly across football culture back then was an interesting experience for many.
Yeah, I can imagine. And probably not a lot of support there, maybe like there is now for people who are having a tough time of it.
I don't think, I mean, obviously Joe Brown, what a fantastic fella Joe was. You know, he sort of oversaw the youths and you know, did the youth development stuff. But, you know, the staff, playing staff was like a lot shallower then. You know, we look at these days and you've got, hey, dear me, you've got coaches, assistant coaches, phase coaches, assistant to phase coaches. Like, it's mad the way football is. But back then you kind of had manager, resi team manager, youth coach, and, you know, it's a lot smaller, so, you know, a lot more opportunities, I think, to bond and be around people. But yeah, the apprentices dressing room was quite ruthless at times and difficult to comprehend and understand what was going on in there.
Yeah. Did it sort of change how you felt about the club at the time?
I think I always loved Man United. It's like a bit of a, I always describe it as like a bit of a bittersweet symphony, like, you know, the sweetness of playing for that great club. And I always say it, you know, 5 minutes in the B team for me without running on with that shirt on, like, absolutely, that would have been unbelievable, a dream come true. But like anything else, you get a bit greedy, go through the youth teams, into reserves, the Central League as it was back then, and I managed to get involved with a couple of United friendlies, like the first team friendlies. I went to Histon for Julian, a lad called Giuliano Majorana's, kind of raise some money for his club. And, you know, you get that taste, but, you know, unfortunately, that it wasn't to be for me. That wasn't my destiny.
Yeah, yeah. We will come on to that in the second part of your footballing journey at United. That's all for part one. We'll be back after this break to talk about some of those football stories.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Manchester Is Red podcast. You talked a bit there at the start about kind of the youth system and what it was like to fit in on the pitch then. I mean, what are your footballing memories from that time? What sort of stands out when you look back?
Just fortunate enough to be around some quality footballers, really. You know, you look at some of the players back then, they were, you know, my heroes, really. So it was quite surreal in a way that you're coming through the schoolboy system and you've got like Norman Whiteside and my East posters on your walls, and then a year or two later going at full-time at 16 after your GCSEs, you know, and training alongside these players at times. And you know, I think that was one of the good things back then, Tyrone. You used to, like, Archie Knox, yeah, was a system, and you mix everybody in, like, five-a-side teams or six-a-side teams, and, you know, it was amazing. And you know, just being around those players was great. And I think the Central League, you know, there's been a lot of debate about this, you know, like, alongside the under-21s league in the modern day. You know, maybe the Central League back then was kind of like a good grounding for bringing you on as a player, because I think most fixtures you'd have the first team would play, so like 3 o'clock on Old Trafford, Man United, Everton, then there'd be a reserve fixture at Goodison, you know, and in the reserve team, like, you know, later on down the line at United, you had like lads like Norman White and then Peter Beagrie, and, you know, like good quality players who were coming back from injuries or who were just not quite in the first team frame at that time. You know, and it really tested you, and you had like Man City, Liverpool, like Ian Rush playing for Liverpool, and you know, it was some great experiences. And again, it's just that step for me, that next step into the kind of the first team pool, prove the most challenging one, like it does for many young players. Yeah, it was just a sort of a step beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, you had just before the class of 92, as mentioned before, who sort of stood out from your time? You write in the book about Giggs, and you mentioned it before, Eddie Doherty, who, yeah, for anyone that's read Ollie Kay's book, a brilliant book, and a bit of a forgotten story really before Ollie wrote it, but clearly a incredible footballer.
Yeah, he was brilliant, yeah, and you had like Ryan playing on left wing. I mean, Ryan was what you'd term a precocious youngster. You know, I first seen him at like about 13, 14-year-old in the Cliff, and I remember Eric Harrison coming over. Like, we used to wait for our session to start, and he was talking, just saying, "I'll see that lad over there," like young Rob, obviously pointing to young Ryan, said he's going to be some player in, but yeah, you're only 14, 15 yourself, and like, you don't really mean anything, but you know, you look at Ryan's career, he thinks, you know, he wasn't wrong, Gary, was he, like talent spotting and stuff like that, you know, like 963 appearances, Premier League, Champions League, you know, he won it all. But yeah, I think like Wayne Rooney, Norman Whiteside, you know, young Kobe Mainoo now. I think Ryan was like a precocious star, really. I think Ryan was, you know, I think Fergie described him when he seen him play for Salford Boys just down the road, and he's like a cocker spaniel chasing a crisp packet in the wind, the way he moved, beautifully balanced, fantastic left foot, and you know, went on, as we know, to have an unbelievable career at Man United. So yeah, Ryan, Mark Bosnich was our youth team keeper. We had young Darren Ferguson in midfield, like Sir Alex's son, like he was a good player. So yeah, some decent players. But as you say, Eddie Doherty was like on a par, I'd say, with Ryan at the time. You know, you get a lot of when you get these experts watching race horses on the gallops, they usually say the dogs are barking about this particular horse ready to make its debut. But you know, the dogs were barking about Eddie as well, and you know, at the time, probably, you know, as good as, you know, AD, maybe not a shade ahead, you know, great trickery, good skills, pacey, and again, that football world of destiny and ups and downs, and it, unfortunately, you know, the winds of destiny didn't blow the way for Adrian either.
Yeah, you write the book, you're still in touch with his dad.
Yeah, I'm still in touch with his dad to this day, Jimmy, fantastic man. Ollie had like a book launch at Mulligan's in Manchester, and you know, lots of people who contributed to the book had come to that and met Jimmy there, and just a really sad situation, really, in relation to the what happened to AD. Like, you know, the science, the medical science wasn't great back then. So, like, when you had a really serious injury, it was going to be tough to come back from that. I think he did, like, his cruciate ligaments. And you know, his game was built on pace and trickery. And I think once you get that first blow, you know, a really bad injury, I think it's tough to come back through. So, certainly in that generation.
Yeah, Mark Bosnich, was he as big a character in the E team as
yeah,
he was?
Yeah, great fella, very laid back, Bozza, massive feet. I didn't envy the apprentice who were cleaning Bozza's boots. They were huge, like size 12s or something, like barges. But yeah, great lad, very laid back, and you know, very mild mannered, a typical laid back Aussie, but like top fella. And you know, look, you know, we did all right. I think, again, Sam, you just look at destiny. This word destiny keeps cropping up, but, you know, we were just before the class of 92 and we got to a quarter-final in the FA Youth Cup and a semi-final as well. And, you know, the semi-final, second leg on Old Trafford, we played Tottenham and we absolutely murdered them. So we're 2-0 down from the first leg. We got a goal back, 2-1, hit the post, you know, one-on-ones missing, hit the bar, and just couldn't quite get that deficit turned round. And it's like the Mark Robbins situation in the FA Cup. If that youth team had won the FA Youth Cup that year, it makes you wonder, doesn't it? But it didn't, and you know, that's the way it is.
Yeah, well, there's such a big sort of luster around that competition with United, isn't there? Far more than probably any other club, that those teams that win the Youth Cup, there's a lot attached to it at Man United, isn't there?
There used to be. I think Man United, you know, going right back into the 50s, Tyrone, you know, massive, you know, onus on doing well in the FA Youth Cup, and that used to really be the measure whether you'd get like a professional contract or not. You know, if your youth teams were doing all right, they'd probably hand like a few more out. But, you know, United have always wanted to do well in that competition, you know, going right back into the 50s where they had a great run at it. And, you know, we've had some sporadic wins over the years, haven't we? But, you know, usually a good marker for Man United is to try and do well in that FA Youth Cup, and to play in that was amazing as well.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned a lot of the first team lads there. Like you said, there was probably a lot more of a mix of that age group than there was now. I think you were training together in pre-season and got quite a bit of experience around them.
Yeah, it used to take us, it's mad, isn't it? You talk about exposure these days, like you can't get near first team players. Yeah. Now it's all fenced off, and you know, and back then we had one of the pre-season on a big coach, everybody just rolled up into Eaton Park, just running around Eaton Park and up and down the hills, and you know, really good experiences. And I think back then as well, like the sort of science was a little bit, you know, behind, lacking. Mm-hmm. So it almost used to be like, just do loads of running in the pre-season. Yeah. I think it's more, you know, you got more monitored now. You know, you look at fatigue levels, heart rate levels, you know, distances covered. Everything gets measured, you know, in relation to where you're at. But, you know, back then it was just like run for 3 or 4 weeks and then amazing, the balls come out. But I think usually in pre-season now the balls are out quite early, and you know, the game's busy as well now, isn't it? Loads of lads, especially at first team level, they got international duty. Yeah, and exactly. You know, back then it wasn't uncommon for you to have like a 6 week break and, you know, and come back, and it used to be like a bit of a laugh that you used to get weighed out when you sort of finished for your break and then weighed in, and if you was like a few pounds over, like fined for stuff like that. But I used to get some players turn up like £8 overweight, and never. You think, oh, that's got to be burnt off now in pre-season, you know. So, but yeah, it's looking at that, how it was then and how it was now, like poles apart, really.
Yeah, it's a different world, isn't it?
Different world. Completely different world.
And what about the players in the first team? Was there any that were either particularly welcoming or any that you were kind of starstruck playing alongside or getting close to?
All of them really were good lads, so very grounded, you know, no airs or graces. You know, like being around like Brian Robson, Steve Bruce, Gary Pallister, like Dennis Irwin came, Mark Hughes, Clayton Blackmore, all fantastic, all brilliant lads. And you get greedy in football, you just want a bit of what they're experiencing, getting into that first team. But Like I say, unfortunately, it was just a little bit too far for myself at that level.
You did make a first-team experience, the Histon game. Mm-hmm. A friendly, you mentioned the circumstances before. Talk to us about that day. What it was a friendly, but what did it feel like to you?
Yeah, really good. I got picked up a lad from, which is again another story that's amazing, like playing for Histon in kind of the non-leagues, like arrives at United on trial. And did really well. Great footballer, Giuliano, good left peg. And I think got some footage, aren't they, on YouTube, like against Arsenal, Lee Dixon back in the day. And got like sort of chosen, because we used to love back then that on a Friday or sort of on the morning of a game situation, like they used to pin the teams up on the board and used to sort of rush and have a look where you were playing. Like, are you in the B team, the A team, the Rezzes? You know, are you included with the first team squad? And That was incredible. And we went over to Histon, so we met at Old Trafford, and remember there's a bit of a wind up. I was only 17 at the time, so quite young really. And I remember clambering on the coach at Old Trafford, and as you do, you're completely nervous, and you threw my bag up and onto the top rail and sat down at this table. And I remember Steve Bruce getting on and said, "You can't sit there, that's the gaffer's table. He play his cards on there." So senior pro Brucey, no problem. So I starts getting up straight away, moving, and then Fergie sort of arrives on the front of the coach, and Brucey goes down the coach and shouts to Fergie, "Tongy said he's not moving," with a few expletives thrown in. He went, "Hey, you better get moving," and all that. So I was out like a shot, to be honest with you. But yeah, went on to Histon. Lee Martin, I think, picked up an injury towards the end of the first half, so I got my chance then. And in the team that night, we had like Mal Donaghy, Jim Leighton, Clayton Blackmore, Mark Hughes, Stevie Bruce, Lee Sharp, so like a good mixture of first team players. And like you say, Tyrone, just I think Sir Alex just sending that team down just to raise a few funds for the game. So we played on the Abbey Stadium, which was like Cambridge's ground, and I think it was like a few thousand turnovers. So one of the great sort of things that I really particularly makes me proud is like in one of the yearbooks, it's like first team other, and like you got your name in there. So yeah, I'll take that.
Yeah, that still means a lot to you. It's still special to have played for the first team.
Yeah, it's like, again, you want more, don't you? You want more, but it was tough back then because first team squads these days are huge, and fortunate enough to have quite a lot on the bench, and like up to seven subs, eight subs, things like that. And back then you had like 11 and then two subs, and I was just like way down the pecking order because my predominant position really was right fullback. So Viv Anderson came in, and then if Viv got injured, I'd like Clayton Blackmore would fit in there. If Clayton got injured, Paul Ince would drop back in there. If Ince got injured, like Mickey Fielder to play there. And it's like getting that chance, you think, I'm down the pecking order. And I think you had to be fantastically good to break through. And I kind of use the analogy of like levels in boxing. You have like domestic, you have like British, Commonwealth, European, world. I think everybody finds the level sometimes, and I think I wasn't like at the top there. I was kind of in the midst of that, but I think probably being a bit unfair on myself there, because I think you don't know unless you get a chance, and that's the key, isn't it? It's getting that opportunity. And sometimes your chance can arrive from nowhere. And something, unfortunately, for many, like your chance never comes, sadly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you did sign a professional deal. You went to the cup final in 1990 as kind of part of the bigger group. Did you feel close to it at the time? Does it feel like you're kind of close to it?
I think it's a big step. I think it's probably a bigger step than people realise. I think coming through the sort of the B team and the A team, and I think the first start, when I first started at United, I think I was kind of doing okay. I played in an under-18s team at 15. Played in the Central League at 16, played in that first team friendly at Histon 17. So it was going all right. And then I think after that, I think it went downhill quite quickly. But yeah, it's tough time on it. You talk about youth development. I think there's a lot of research and knowledge on that these days where, sometimes you need patience with players, and sometimes players are kind of late bloomers, or you get to 18, 19, you're maybe not as mature as maybe someone who's 15, 16, who's getting in the first team. I think back then I got to like 19 and a half, and you're thinking, well, I'm not really in that first team pool at the moment. You know, maybe it was the right decision from the club to sort of say, you know, you're going to have to look for somewhere else and move on there. That's again just the way it goes.
Yeah, that came in 1991. I mean, did Fergie deliver the news?
Yeah, he did.
Can you still remember that?
Very clearly, yeah, very clearly. We'd had an interesting week, actually. We'd been chasing, like, the A-team title down, and we had four games to play in 7 days, like a Monday night, a Saturday morning, Tuesday night, Thursday night, Saturday morning. Anyway, we're catching City, we're top of the league, so we're catching them, and we got to, I think, a point behind City, so it went to a last game of the season shootout on City's old training ground called Platt Lane, and played in that game. We won 2-1. Ryan Giggs were playing. John O'Kane was just breaking through. So quite a strong A team, as they used to be back then. And Sir Alex and Archie Knox were watching. So remember after the game, he singled me out for some really good praise. Because on City's left wing, they had a lad playing called Jason Beckford, who was kind of like getting into City's first team. And he said, you've done brilliant this one. He said, you've not given him a kick. He said, you've got forward when you could. And so I'm thinking in my brain, it sounds all right, because a new contract kind of offers were coming. So anyway, that was the Saturday morning. So about Tuesday, Brian Whitehouse, who was the Resi team manager back then, he came into the dressing room at the Cliff. He said, Sir Alex wants to see you. So I said, okay, no problem. So I was looking at Brian's face to see if there's any clues when we were going up the stairs at the Cliff. So I went into his door, knocked on, and he just it's almost like Lord Sugar in The Apprentice, just got to it straight. So just pulled the trigger and said, we're not going to renew your contract, son. We feel as though you lack a yard of pace to become a first team player here. So it's like frozen your body. I didn't know what to do, what to say. I didn't know how to react. You know, do you beg for another chance? Do you? I just remember saying to thanks so much for I'd been there from 14 to 19 and a half, and, you know, thanks for the opportunity to come and play at this unbelievable club. And, you know, I just dealt with it as humbly as I could. But, you know, I think once that news was delivered, yeah, that was you talk about tough blows in your life. Yeah, that was hard, because usually the hardest blows you don't see coming sometimes. I've had a decent season. I've done all right. Certainly not let myself down. And that was it. Deselected. And you know, I'm kicking meals and for sort of till my contract kind of run out, which was, I think the contract's run kind of June the 30th. So this was about May time. So we had a couple of tours to go. I went to the Blue Stars tournament in Switzerland, and we had a trip to Trinidad and Tobago back then. But I think by then you're just kind of kicking your heels and just waiting for it to run through, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be back after this break. We're going to talk a bit about that life post-United. Welcome back to the Manchester Is Red podcast. Dr. Alan Tong in the studio with us today. We've just ended the previous part on the day. So Alex told you it was, or Fergie, or Alex as I guess as he was then, pre-knighted, told you it was over. I mean, you know, he said you were 19 and a half when you delivered that news at a club the size of Manchester United. How hard does something like that hit?
Yeah, it was tough, because, you know, it's like going to the electric chair, because all my family, I felt I'd let them down, felt I'd let, you know, lots of people down. And, you know, you just didn't know. I remember crossing the roads, because I think from a young age, because you're a reasonable footballer, you kind of, that identity shaped around, oh, it's Alan the footballer, Man United. And, you know, people just naturally just stopped you in the village where I lived and said, how's it going? Who have you got Saturday? And, you know, you used to sort of say, oh, we got Liverpool, or we got Man City, or, you know, Everton. And then I remember seeing people crossing roads. I just think I don't really want to speak to them, so I'll pretend I've not seen them. So not great, really. And you know, so Alex said he'd try and fix us up with somewhere. And, you know, he went on to say it was quite a difficult summer that summer. So he even tried Scottish clubs, but recruitment's challenging. I think probably one of the things that you learn, that unfortunately in football, Tyrone, you can plummet quite quickly. So I remember going down to Bolton for a couple of weeks, on trial, because back then there was no agent, so you'd have to do your own phoning round. I remember speaking to Sammy McElroy at Macclesfield, do you fancy having a look at us? I've been at United for 4 years, and managed to go down to Bolton, and had a couple of weeks there, and they sort of said to me, well, you know, we've got enough here at the moment, we don't feel as though you're going to bring anything. And I remember just going on, slinging my bag on the floor, thinking, where's my life going now? It's going downhill quickly. So anyway, like lots of things in life, a little chance arrived, and it came through a neighbour, actually. When I was 17 at United, I got chosen to go and play for a Football League representative side in Russia. It was to mark 100 years of the Football League. And Alan Ball was in the managerial kind of group for the party. And he kind of knew me from then. So a neighbour phoned Alan Ball at Exeter and said, like, Alan Tong's been deselected at United, not there anymore. Do you fancy having a look at him? And he always laughed, like, sound to my Exeter fans, like, I didn't, if you'd have said, where's Exeter on the map? I wouldn't have had a clue.
Right, okay.
My geography
a long way away.
A long way away. So I remember, like, packing up my Ford Fiesta and all my bags, and they told us to meet at their club shop, and I, you know, went into some digs with some of the players there and things like that, and that was it. That was kind of my lifeline. And Bawley said to me, like, you're lucky you've got a second chance, because I think Bawley had he'd experienced it at Bolton. They told him it was too small. So I kind of, like, we had a bit of a connection there.
Yeah.
And I think that was kind of like down to Exeter, and I, spent a good few years down there in relation to a beautiful part of the country, some fantastic people and some great people that I managed to meet on in that journey. So yeah, a really good step.
Yeah, and a pride moment to play and, make a short career of it, I guess, but a career in the Football League.
Yeah, like anything else, one of the players got injured, a lad called Scott Eiley, used to play with Man City, Birmingham City, and he sort of done his knee in or something, and balls like, you're playing Saturday with Wigan Athletic. And I think in that kind of next season or two, I'm sort of like establishing myself as a kind of regular player, but I was in and out and, managed to play in like the Devon Derby down there, Exeter V player. That's like their Man United, Man City of the Southwest, and managed to play Stoke City away as well. Got man of the match there. So a lot of people say, what's the measure of a footballer? Can you do it on a cold, windy, rainy night at Stoke City? And you say, well, there's proof that I could. So that's it. That's my tagline. So if I ever got an opportunity to go on TV, Sky Sports, for example, when you have on the bottom, like, 12 Premier Leagues, 800. Yeah. That'll be my man of the match at Stoke City, coming across the bottom.
Did it at Stoke on a cold, wet Tuesday night.
That's your tagline.
We still don't know if Messi can, and we know you can. No. So
that's your tagline, isn't it? So, yeah.
And you mentioned before injury kind of forced you to retire early. It's clear from reading the book how difficult that is when it forces you out of the game so early.
It was, and it just, again, you talk about that cultural experience of, back then it was like, don't show any emotions, nothing bothers you, crack on. If you get smashed down, get back up again. And I was carrying, like, I was having pins and needles in my legs and my feet for a while, but I just kept playing with it. And it comes to a stage where I remember playing like Swansea City, where I rubbed a load of deep heat on my back and just to get through. And anyway, it come to a stage, Tyrone, I said, well, I've got to see a physio. And he sent me for an MRI scan at French A Hospital in Bristol. And they had a look and he said, like, my back's like in a really bad way. Like, I'd had my disc had slipped and the pins and needles were like my disc touching on my spinal nerves. And so I had to have screws and plates inserted to get it all aligned again. And, the surgeon said it was like, it was in a bit of a mess, to be fair. And he said, you were stupid for keep playing on that one bad tackle on that, or you fell on it. That could have severed like your spinal nerves. It would have been like more of a serious situation. And so, I remember thinking to myself, like, football's not worth that, like, keep playing. And so that was it. So, I did try to come back a bit of rehab and, managed to get myself into some condition. But I think from a full-time perspective, like, so it's, like, it's not worth, like, you've got screws and plates in your back now. And I always think, like, well, if someone, like, knees me in the back and, or you get, like, you're going to keep your fitness up, it's just not going to work. And so I did play for a year or two in the non-leagues. I dropped a part-time, like, and just because I love football and I just wanted to try and keep in somewhere. But I think up to that time, I was kind of starting to fall out of love, I think, a bit with football. I think I was kind of psychologically done with it and, ready to maybe think about doing something else. And so that was again, another stage that I had to kind of try and deal with, which was, as you say, was really tough.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's knowing what to do, I guess, isn't it? You'd known pretty much all your life was football, and you come to your mid-20s and it's over and you've got to forge a new career.
Not qualified in anything else. Man United put me through a BTEC as part of the development education stuff back then. They'll still do it now, look after education, because I think it's really important. Yeah. But that's all I had, like a BTEC, and you're thinking, well, what can I do with that? Not a lot. No careers advice. Like, you walk out of, like, the club and it's like, who do you go to? Like, I just felt very isolated. I think within your isolation, I think you suffer a bit with, like, I wouldn't say I was like fully depressed, but I definitely had like aspects of depression because you're lost. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. And unfortunately, when you've got an idle mind, I remember a medic saying this to me once, an idle mind is the devil's playground. You ended up in pubs drinking too much and gambling too much, overeating, putting loads of weight and just in a bit of a mess really for a few years. And, I had to sort of like get myself right. But I think it was my family, my daughter Lauren, who inspired me really to try and, get myself back on track again. And probably, in that spell after a year or two, just going through different jobs, probably made the best decision of my life. And that was to reinvest with my education, go back to university.
Yeah, I was going to say that came at 28, I think it says in the book. I mean, it almost sounds like it's the start of a second life in
100%.
A way.
100%. Because it's like, you get to 28, and I always say that, I never thought like university was for me really, because you'd come through this almost like this practical experience of football. And, I wouldn't say I wasn't overly academic, but I was all right. I was okay. I was in the kind of the middle bands, and I got some decent scores on my GCSEs. But, back then you always thought, well, university to me seemed like, remember the Open University, like mad professors, like with ridiculous physics on the boards and stuff like that. And you're thinking, I don't know if that's for me. But anyway, I went on an open day and they said, well, we've got a sports science degree. And I think that was probably one of my ambitions, to try and get a job associated with sport again. And I went back to uni, 28-year-old with 18-year-olds, which is fine. That's okay, because I knew I had to forge another career, another direction. And then since then, I kind of caught the education bug and, picked up a degree in sports science. I did my teacher training straight away, so I've become a qualified teacher. So I did get in another career now, which is fantastic. And then since then, I've done a master's degree in philosophy and just picked up my PhD as well. So yeah, it's like my first life, and it's like two parts, isn't it, sort of thing. So, yeah. But yeah.
I mean, what do you think the 19-year-old Alan Tong leaving United would have been told if you had all those?
I know, you probably wouldn't have believed it. Yeah, you would have said like, nah, no chance, And he always laughed, Tyrone. You get some of these bets where people say, like, if your son plays for England before they're 18 or the first team at Man United, and, oh, we'll give you 10,000 to one for that. I always laugh at it. I imagine if my dad had rocked up in Fred Dunn's and said, right, my son's going to be a Man United professional. He'll play in a kind of first team other game, and then he'll have a PhD as well. The bookies would have said, right, we'll give you 20 million to over that. No way is that going to happen. So, but it was good. My 20 years teaching now has been amazing. I was getting to work with young people and passing some knowledge and wisdom, passing some stuff from like Fergie and Alan Ball and standards and timekeeping and doing your best and coming back from setbacks. And, I think those messages still get passed on. But, I really enjoy my teaching. And like I said, that's something that I've done now since 2004 was my first teaching. I've been, so 20 years later, still in it.
Yeah, and you're a lecturer now at University Campus of Football Business.
That's
so still
right.
kind of connected to the game in a way, I guess.
That's what appealed. And, all centralised around the football industry. Sports coaching and football management and marketing and finance and international football business are loads of topics that... you can sort of explore and write about. But I think sort of my main research area really is around the sort of challenges that footballers face and dealing with anxiety, the ups and downs of the game, and the ups and downs of life really. It's just not football, it's just a mirror, isn't it, what goes on off the field. And like I say, it's something that I enjoy, and working and seeing young people a year or two later saying, like, I really enjoy my time. I'm a coach at Man United. Now I work in the foundation. You bump into them somewhere, and to hear that is really inspiring, and something that I really enjoy.
Yeah. And do you use your own experiences a lot in kind of those teachings?
Yeah, I think so. Again, it's just trying to steer young people, isn't it, in the right direction. In the modern day, there's that many distractions, and it's ridiculous, really. It's a tough world out there. And... Just try to make sure that they don't compromise the values and they stick to the values, and try and avoid poor decisions, because you can easily make poor decisions at times, but just to see them flourishing and doing well, and that's really inspirational.
Yeah. And is it sort of going through education, has it made you reflect on kind of your own journey within football? Has it changed kind of how you look back on it at all?
Yeah, I think football again. It's a tough journey for anybody. You know, if you massive plaudits for players who come in and stay there to 35, it's tough. But you know, I got asked an interesting question the other day. Like, I said, well, if you'd have had a full career and got to 35, 600 games, I was like, I wouldn't have had the chance to do a degree. I probably wouldn't have had the chance to do a master's degree. I wouldn't have done a PhD. So it's like sometimes it's like everything's got a beginning, and everything's got to end. And you know, that was my destiny in football. And like I say, it's not what I set out to do, but like many people's journeys, there's lots of turns, twists, ups, downs, and you know that's where we're at. That's how it happened.
Yeah, yeah. And what about United now? You're still a fan?
Still love United. Still keep an eye on them because I signed a pro deal at the club. I'm very fortunate enough to still be in the ex-players association. So we have some really nice events. Like golf days and sportsmen's dinners, and we've got one coming up, the reunion dinner in April. Got Sir Geoff Hurst as the guest speaker, like a tribute evening to Sir Bobby Charlton, so that'll be fantastic. And I love speaking to like the 50s lads, 60s lads, 70s lads about their experiences, and I think that's one of the sad things I think about the ex-players association is I don't think there's as much onus on it from the player in the modern day, because players move around so much, don't they? And you know, I think that's really sad. And you know, it comes to a point where you kind of get lads like Wes Brown on there playing golf and David May, but like after that, the sort of last 10, 15 years, yeah, I'm not too sure whether ex-players association sits with him in the modern game. I very much doubt it does.
Yeah, it's hard to see really, isn't it? Players almost probably don't feel like they don't really need it, but be a shame to lose that link. I mean, on United then, what have you made of this season? What are you making of
okay,
this?
Yeah, I think the Liverpool game was a real like season definer. I think if we'd have gone out there, I think that would have been, you know, real difficult times for the players, fans, you know, the new staff that have come in. But you know, to get past Liverpool in that dramatic fashion was like incredible. Like listening to some of the commentary, like Liam Bradford on MUTV, Gaz Drinkwater on Radio Manchester, that last goal was unbelievable, wasn't it? Like to call that was fantastic, and what an experience for everybody there. And that, you know, that young fan crying and that when the goal went in, and you know, pictures across the media. And but yeah, I think let's hope. I mean, we've done it before. You know, going back into the '70s, I think Tommy Docherty, we went to Wembley in 76, lost to Southampton, and then he said to in the town hall, don't worry, we'll be back next year to win it, and he did.
Yeah.
So let's hope history repeats itself, where you know we got there last year, unfortunately just missed out. You know, let's hope we can get back there and maybe claim it this year. That'd be unbelievable.
Yeah, definitely. And you're right in the book that I don't agree one bit with the ownership of the Glazer family, which I thought was interesting. There's a lot of ex-players who won't put the red above the parapet, but you know, fair play, you did it. Are you feeling more hopeful for the future now?
Definitely.
With Sir Jim in?
Definitely. I think Sir Jim Ratcliffe coming in, you know, the sort of stuff he's been saying and what he's been doing, and you know, it's really promising. But I think it's been needed for a while, hasn't it? Yeah. You know, I think to have a healthy club, you need everybody connected and everybody working in synergy. And I think for the last kind of, you know, 15, 20 years, that's not been happening. Like nobody's really been talking about direction. Nobody's been really talking about aims and objectives and ambitions that we have. And you know, all of a sudden Sir Jim comes in and talking about like redevelopment and you know, putting some money in, and you know, hopefully exciting. United deserve to be at the top table, you know, like fifth, sixth in the league. That's not Man United. Yeah, exactly. It's not good. And United should be challenging for every trophy, because that's what the club demands, isn't it? So let's hope there's some bright times ahead for the club.
Yeah, definitely. That's great. Alan, Dr. Tong, thank you very much for coming in. This is the book, From Red to Red, available now, out now, I think, available in all good bookshops. That's all from this edition of the Manchester is Red podcast. Please leave us a review and a like if you've enjoyed it. Remember to subscribe. We'll be back with you soon to discuss United's current season. But for now, that's everything. Thanks for listening.